Welcome to this week's Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 11th of March 2025. This week's news items from the local papers were selected by Lisa Tom and Ralph Weirs and read by Ralph Weirs and Patricia Lee. The copying and the distribution of the USB sticks is by Michelle Lawful, and the technical officer, that's me, is David Field. Today, sunrise is just before 6:30 a.m. and sunset is at 6 p.m. And to continue the tradition of the On This Days, on this day, in 2020, COVID-19 was declared to be a pandemic 5 years ago. In 2011, the Fukushima nuclear plant had its awful disaster. In 2004, Paul McCartney was knighted. And going back a bit more, in 1985, Mr. Gorbachev was picked to succeed Mr. Chernyenko.
Oxford's oldest professional orchestra celebrated its Diamond Jubilee with an exceptional concert. The audience at the Sheldonian Theatre was transfixed by the mesmeric performances of the City of Oxford Orchestra and soloist Tom Poster. Despite this being the orchestra's final concert, conductor Stephen Bell had a spring in his step throughout the evening on February the 27th, and the audience could feel the energy coming from each section. The concert started with a bang, thanks to the overture from Ruslan and Ludmilla by Glinka. The basses were particularly impressive, having much larger fingerboards. The overture moved at a breakneck pace, just what the audience needed to set the tone for a joyful concert. Then came the popular Piano Concerto No. 2 by Rachmaninoff, which features heavily in the classic film Brief Encounter. Mr. Poster was outstanding throughout, making the piano sing every note with exceptional feeling. The first movement opens with a very Russian-sounding theme before the beautiful second movement takes over. The second movement is very lyrical, and it was incredible to hear it live. The triumphant third movement brought the first half to a close. Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5 took up the whole second half, and the orchestra didn't disappoint. Again, conductor Mr. Bell had a spring in his step, and the orchestra responded magnificently. Before the concert, the orchestra's director, Lindsay Sanderson, explained why it would be their last. She said, "We had a very, very small audience at the last concert. There's nothing more depressing for the orchestra to have a smaller audience than the orchestra. A lot of the music in Oxford is free. I feel privileged to have been able to look after this orchestra. There are so many orchestras in Oxford now, we can't compete with the free concerts which are put on." Mrs. Sanderson added that the annual concerto by candlelight at Exeter College Chapel will be continuing. There will also be a special event next year to mark 30 years since pianist Mr. Poster first performed with the orchestra. On the orchestra's website it said, "The City of Oxford Orchestra was founded in 1965 with a firm commitment to provide live classical music of the highest quality to the widest possible audience. The orchestra has played to acclaim in most of the capital cities of Europe, whilst also providing all-year-round concerts in Oxford's beautiful historical buildings, in particular Sir Christopher Wren's stunning Sheldonian Theatre."
There are 21 pharmacies across Oxford offering a free flu vaccination before the end of the month. Eligible people who are yet to have their flu vaccine are being encouraged by the NHS to get protected before the 2024-25 flu vaccination programme ends on Monday, March the 31st. The autumn, winter 2024-25 flu vaccination programme has been running since September 2024. Anyone who's eligible for the vaccine and not been vaccinated can still come forward and get theirs. The flu vaccine is recommended for people at higher risk of getting seriously ill from flu. These include anyone who is aged 65 years old or over, including those who will be 65 by March the 31st. Anyone who lives with someone who has a weakened immune system or is the main carer for an older or disabled person is also included. In Oxford, you can get the vaccine at several branches of Boots, including Cornmarket Street, Kiley Road, Banbury Road and London Road. The branch at Oxford Retail Park on Ambassador Avenue in Kiley also offers the service. Jericho Pharmacy, Barton Pharmacy, the Rindway Pharmacy, Woodlands Pharmacy and Woodstock Road Chemist are also on the list. The Medpill Pharmacy on Banbury Road and on Westway Square have the jab, while so too do Headington Pharmacy and Kennington Pharmacy, the Lees Pharmacy in Rose Hill, Wood Farm, Blackford Lees and Greater Lees are also options. Ame's Late Night Pharmacy and Allied Pharmacy in Kiley and Well in Marston round off the list.
A campaign group says businesses are horrified by proposals to remove parking spaces in the city centre and Summertown. The proposals are included in a range of potential schemes for improving streets in Oxford city centre and Oxford North, which residents have been invited to provide feedback on in a new survey. One of the plans, which aims to support pedestrian and business activity, includes removing the service road on the western side of Banbury Road between Diamond Place and Lonsdale Road to introduce more seating space, greenery and cafe seating. Graham Jones, campaign manager for Rescue Oxford, ROCS, backing Oxford businesses, said, "The threat to short-term parking spaces in the middle of Summertown shops will have a very detrimental impact on the retailers and other businesses there. The spaces allow people to stop while en route from work, the hospitals and other locations, to quickly pick up supplies and cause very little inconvenience to the traffic flow in the Banbury Road. The tightening of various junctions will make it very difficult for larger vehicles to turn off the major roads and will slow down the traffic, including buses, on those roads." Action Group said, "Business owners in the city centre, Jericho and Summertown are understandably horrified that the council is proposing to remove their valuable customer parking in St Giles and on Banbury Road. This sends a tone-deaf message to both business owners and customers." Oxfordshire County Council opened a survey seeking residents' views on a range of potential ideas for improving the streets in Oxford City Centre and Oxford North. While it is not a formal consultation, residents will be able to provide feedback on ideas and add suggestions. Other plans included in the survey range from widening pavements, improving the safety of crossings, adding more space for outdoor seating, and enhancing paving. Potential locations include St Giles, Carfax, Hythe Bridge Street, and Little Clarendon Street. Mark Beer, OBE, who is running as an independent Oxford Alliance candidate for Summertown and Walton Manor, said, "The same ideology that has clogged up the arteries to the east and south of our city is coming to North Oxford. What madness is it to suggest that removing well-used parking is done in the name of helping businesses? That defies logic." Fellow independent Oxford Alliance candidate Inga Nicholas said, "Removing the parking from the service road in Summertown, in front of the shops, as well as the spaces in South Parade, will not only detrimentally affect residents, but also local businesses. Without the service road by the shops on Banbury Road, delivery vans to said shops will have to park on Banbury Road itself, creating bottlenecks." Robin Tucker, co-chair of the Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel, COSAT, said that making streets better for pedestrians and buses is vital for Oxford to continue being a successful shopping centre while avoiding traffic jams. He said, We're excited by these positive and forward-looking visions for some of Oxford's most iconic streets. Many studies, like Living Streets Pedestrian Pound, show how making places better for people can increase retail sales by 20-30%, and is better for health and community too. He added that the group would like to see improvements to High Street and Walton Street, and that they want more proper spaces just for cyclists. Councillor Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Infrastructure and Development Strategy, said, "This survey invites early engagement, feedback and ideas to help inform initial suggestions. There will be further opportunities to feedback on the specific details of individual projects as they are brought forward. The initial suggestions are available for review online and the public can share their views. A full report, including public feedback, will be published later this spring."
A British man from Oxfordshire has been sentenced to 19 years in prison in Russia for allegedly fighting for Ukraine. James Scott Rees Anderson, 22, from Banbury, is a British national and former British Army soldier who was jailed after a closed hearing in a Russian court, according to national reports. It is alleged that he was fighting for Ukraine in the Kursk region, an area of significant counterattack against the invading force since August last year. He was accused of illegally crossing into the Kursk region and committing unspecified criminal acts against civilians, causing significant harm to property and destabilizing the activities of the authorities. He was captured by Russian forces in November last year. The court said he will serve the first 5 years of his sentence in a Russian jail and the remainder in a penal colony. Mr. Anderson was found guilty of mercenary and terrorism offences in a trial last year at a military court in the city of Kursk, but was handed the near 20-year sentence this week. At the time of the trial, a video of Mr. Anderson identifying himself to the court wearing handcuffs and combat fatigues was widely circulated. He also identified himself as a former officer in the British Army from 2019 to 2023. Serving as a private signalman in the force. He signed up for Ukraine's International Legion after losing his job. Mr. Anderson is the first known foreign fighter to be captured and sentenced on Russian territory, of about 20,000 who make up Ukraine's international division. The court's press service and state media TASS said Mr. Anderson pleaded guilty, and it published a photograph of him handcuffed and locked in a cage of the kind which defendants stand in for Russian trials. War in Ukraine has been going on for 3 years now, with a significant 3-year anniversary marked on February the 24th. In Oxford, Ukrainians and supporters held a peace rally to mark the date, in collaboration with the city's university's Ukrainian societies and several charities, including Razom for Ukraine and Ukraine Medical Support. More than 300 people turned out to continue awareness of the war and the Ukrainian people who remain displaced in the UK, with loved ones remaining in war-torn regions of the country or fighting on the front lines. Oxford authorities have shown support for the Ukrainian cause, flying the country's flag on each anniversary of the invasion, and after significant public pressure, ending its city twinning agreement with the Russian city of Perm in the first year of the war.
Oxford got a shout-out on the red carpet of the Brit Awards from a singer up for an award. Elmine, a British Sudanese singer raised in Oxford, was one of three nominated for the Rising Star Brit Award and attended the red carpet at the O2 Arena in London. The R&B vocalist spoke of what it was like trying to break into the music scene from his beginnings in the quiet county to reaching global recognition. "We're a very small place," he told a reporter, "to the point where radio coming out of Abingdon is our claim to fame, which is sick. Abingdon isn't Oxford, so that's the level we're at." Elmine, whose full name is Abdallah Elliman, received breakout success in 2021 and has since collaborated with artists such as Stormzy and Samfa. After three popular EPs, the artist only just lost out to the Rising Star Award to Miles Smith. He said, "I've had a lot of help. I went back and did a show at a pub because our venue options are very low in Oxford. But it was beautiful out in Jericho and the range of people that were there was beautiful. It was just a fun vibe. It just felt good knowing that home is still there and if I come back, it'll be us around the piano." Asked what must-visit spot he would recommend for people visiting Oxford, the singer skipped the tourist hotspots and made a recommendation as a self-described kebab connoisseur. "McCoy's Kebab," he recommended. "It's a kebab van right after Corn Market Street by Christchurch. Best kebab in the world."
A refugee who escaped the Nazis in Germany and came to live in Oxford has died aged 92. Irene Gill was born Vera Irene Gabriele Beata Zuntz on February the 17th, 1932, in Freiburg, southern Germany. Her family was German-Jewish, so they had to flee from Hitler when she was 3 years old, first to Denmark, then to Britain. Her father, Gunther Zuntz, had managed to get a job in one of the Oxford College libraries, and a committee to aid refugees managed to set them up with a house in Summertown. The family became part of a dynamic community of emigre Jewish intellectuals who worked tirelessly to bring more refugees over as the Holocaust gathered pace. Many were children brought over on the famous Kinder Transport, which rescued nearly 10,000 children from Nazi territories in 1938-39. Many came to Oxford, and some stayed at the Zuntz House in Thorncliffe Road. Irene was viciously bullied at school in Oxford and called a dirty little German rat. But she did well academically, and after a couple of years trying to make a career in repertory theatre, went up to study German at University College London. There she met David Gill. They were married in 1959. Both were founder members of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament and took part in the first Aldermaston March that same year. They had three children. Tom was born in 1960. And they took him with them to Uganda in 1962, believing that the equator would be relatively free from the fallout from the atmospheric nuclear tests being carried out at the time. Nick was born in Uganda, and after they returned to the house in Thorncliffe Road, they adopted Jackie, who was of mixed British and Jamaican heritage, as a small contribution to making Britain a harmonious, multicultural society. Both worked as teachers, David at Magdalen College School, Irene as a German tutor at several Oxford colleges. After moving away to teaching positions in High Wycombe and and later Maidenhead. They returned to Oxford in 1982. Irene worked at the old College of Further Education, now at the City of Oxford College, teaching German. Irene and David were stalwarts of the peace movement and leading figures in the Oxford branch of CND. They left the Labour Party over Tony Blair's support for the war in Iraq and often voted Green. They were both committed vegetarians. Irene never forgot her time in Uganda. She corresponded with former students for decades and paid for several of them to get a proper education. Later in life, she had refugees living in her house, just as her mother had done back in the war years.
Hundreds of model railway fans gathered at a local major annual exhibition. Graham Haddingham, vice chairman of Abingdon and District Model Railway Club, said the event at Abingdon and Witney College was a great success. Now, he and his team are planning for next year's show. He said, "Like last year, we held the exhibition over 2 days and we plan to do the same again. Last year we had 2,800 paying customers and we had just over 2,900 this year. There were a huge number of families from Oxford, Abingdon, Didcot and the surrounding areas. Exhibitors were surprised how many families with children there were, alongside the serious modellers. Local advertising and social media was very successful in terms of shifting advance tickets." Mr. Haddingham added, "A lot of people stayed for a few hours. We had 37 layouts, 17 traders, and a number of different societies attending. The feedback is what a great show it was, and we are looking forward to returning next year. That will be the third year of staging the event across a weekend. It's becoming a really popular annual event for the town."
A man who admitted stealing a £4.75 million gold toilet from Blenheim Palace said he was stressed to death while trying to sell his loot, a jury has heard. James Sheen has admitted taking part in a burglary at the Oxfordshire Palace in the early hours of September the 14th, 2019, when the fully functioning 18-carat toilet was stolen from the birthplace of Winston Churchill. The toilet, an artwork by Italian artist Maurizio Cattelan entitled America, was a star attraction in an exhibition when it was stolen during a 5-minute audacious raid by sledgehammer-wielding thieves who smashed their way in. Jurors heard yesterday during the evidence of Frederick Doe, also known as Frederick Sines, that Sheen told him in a message he was stressed trying to sell the gold, which Doe said he did not know was from the palace toilet. Sheen, 40, wrote in a text conversation dated September the 26th, 2019, "I'm stressed out to death, and that's the truth." Doe, 36, of Burley Lane in Ascot, Berkshire, is accused of helping Sheen sell the gold from the stolen toilet. Jurors previously heard Sheen first got in touch with Doe on September the 16th, 2019, 2 days after the raid at Blenheim Palace, asking if Doe could help him sell 20 kilos of gold. The court heard the pair arranged to meet on September the 23rd, 2019, in Hatton Garden to see the owner of Packer of London Jewellery, Bora Gokhook. Sheen turned up in Hatton Garden carrying a black gym bag which contained 5 kilos of gold, Doe told jurors. Doe said he was carrying a sports bag with him that he had taken from the boot of his car, just like a gym bag, quite big and black. We went in. I introduced him to Bora. I spoke to Bora about the gold. He, Sheen, took another smaller bag from inside the bag. He left that there. It was just another black bag, like a hold-all bag. Bora said, "Just come back this afternoon." Mr. Sheen said it was the gold in the hold-all, 5 kilos of gold. He said that to Bora and myself. Doe told jurors he never looked inside the bag and did not see the gold in person. Not at any given time, he said. He estimated the three of them were in the jewellery shop for about 3 to 4 minutes before they walked out. But by September the 26th, 2019, Sheen had not received any money from Guchuk, and the deal between them collapsed before the 5 kilos of gold were handed back to Sheen, Doe told the court. After that, Doe had no further involvement in trying to sell the gold, he told jurors. Asked by his defence lawyer, Crispin Aylett, KC, whether he had ever helped sell amounts of gold as large as 20 kilos, Doe replied, no. When asked what was the largest amount of gold he ever dealt with, Doe said, I've seen gold, but I have never really dealt with gold myself. Never been a gold dealer. I deal more in watches and jewellery. Doe told jurors on Monday he had been passionate about watches since childhood, which led him to develop contacts with jewellers at Hatton Garden in London. He also said he had not heard of the raid at Blenheim Palace until November the 14th, 2019, when Guchuk was interviewed by police. Doe and Guchuk, 41, from West London, each deny one count of conspiracy to transfer criminal property. It is believed Sheen took the 20 kilos of gold from the toilet artwork to Birmingham Jewellery Quarter on September the 27th, 2019, and sold it for 26,000 a kilogram, pocketing a total of £520,000, the court heard. Sheen, from Wellingborough, Northamptonshire, also pleaded guilty to an offence of transferring or converting gold in Birmingham on that date. The trial will resume today, the 5th of March.
Emma Watson has invested £4.95 million into a side project while she studies at Oxford University. The actress is world famous for her portrayal of Hogwarts' witch Hermione Granger in all 8 films of the Harry Potter franchise, alongside co-stars Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint. Ms. Watson has turned her attention to studies after her iconic role in J.K. Rowling's series, as well as parts in Hollywood films The Perks of Being a Wallflower and Little Women. This has seen her study a master's degree in creative writing at the University of Oxford from September 2023 onwards, but now is said to have progressed to a DPhil. Aside from her studies in acting, Ms. Watson also co-owns a gin brand named Rene alongside her brother Alex Watson since its grand launch 2 summers ago. The siblings, who both grew up in Oxford, revealed they were inspired by childhood trips to the family's vineyard in Shabley. Their father, Chris Watson, planted the Domaine Watson Vineyards over 30 years ago after falling in love with the region whilst working as a barrister in Paris. It is made with a base spirit crafted from grapes salvaged from the winemaking process, with inspiration from the Chablis wine region. Now, after closing out a successful 2024 for their luxury gin brand, Ms. Watson and her brother have announced they have raised an additional £4.95 million. The new fund stands as an important turning point in the growth of the brand as the Watsons target expansion internationally. Currently present in 11 countries, the distribution of Rene has now been confirmed for a further 22, with a focus now on the US and its states. CEO and co-founder Alex Watson said, "The raise will support expansion in the US, off the back of our successful California and New York launches. Consumers' preference for premiumization and a desire to drink less but better continues to grow. The gin costs £48 per 70 centilitre bottle and is also set to launch in France, Spain, Dubai and Canada later this year. After launching the brand in 2023, Miss Watson said, "To me, Rene is a family project. Not only does the Chablis region evoke very special memories of growing up, I've loved having the opportunity to create something with my brother Alex. I'm particularly proud of upcycling grapes from vineyards, including my dad's, to reduce waste and create something new, being one of the only gins on the market using mushroom packaging and our carbon neutral product status. We will continue to challenge ourselves as much as possible here because this is such a passion of mine."
An Oxfordshire school held a unique event to help students learn about different careers. Aureus School in Didcot welcomed a range of professionals to take part in a human library event. The event, organised by Carolyn Sewell, aimed to broaden the career aspirations of Year 8 students. Industry experts from various fields, including healthcare, engineering, and politics, participated in the event. Ms. Saul, who is responsible for personal development in the school, said, "We are so proud we can expose our students to so many different professions, and thank all of the books, inverted commas, for giving up their time today." Each professional shared their personal career journeys, allowing students to ask questions and explore what different jobs involve. This helps students understand the wide range of options available for their future. Ollie Glover, who participated in the event, said, "I commend Aureus School for organising their Human Library Day. There is very clear evidence that encouraging young people to think about careers early increases their employment opportunities later on. I thank Aureus School for the opportunity to participate."
Dr. Leah Veronese from Oxford University's English faculty has unearthed a rare manuscript copy of Shakespeare's famous Sonnet 116, tucked away in a 17th century poetry collection. This treasure was found among the papers of Elias Ashmole, 1617 to 1692, founder of the Ashmolean Museum and a strong supporter of the monarchy during the English Civil War. This is only the second known manuscript copy of the sonnet ever discovered. Dr. Veronese came across this remarkable find while researching her DPhil, Oxford University's version of the PhD, in the Bodleian Library. The manuscript is part of a miscellany, a type of manuscript, a document written by hand rather than typed or printed, which contains a selection of texts from different authors on various subjects. Early modern poetry was often circulated in miscellanies. This manuscript even contains some of Elias Ashmole's own original poetry. This exciting discovery shows that centuries of searching for evidence about Shakespeare and his early reception hasn't exhausted the archives. What Dr. Veronese shows in her investigation of this new version is that the sonnet, being understood in the context of royalist politics, a long way from its role in modern weddings. Dr. Veronese explained, "As I was leafing through the manuscript, the poem struck me as an odd version of Sonnet 116. When I looked in the catalogue, originally compiled in the 19th century, the poem was described, not inaccurately, as on constancy in love, but it doesn't mention Shakespeare. I think the combination of the additional first line, self-blinding error seize those minds, and absence of Shakespeare from the original catalogue description may be the reason why this poem has passed unnoticed as a copy of Sonnet 116 all these years. What makes this version particularly fascinating is how the poem has been adapted. The sonnet sits among politically charged works, for example, banned Christmas carols and satirical poems on the tumultuous events of the early 1640s. In this copy, the sonnet has been adapted as a song set to music by the composer Henry Lawes. This copy only includes the text, but the music itself can be found in a book of songs in New York Public Library. The song setting includes 7 additional lines and changes to the Shakespeare's original opening and final couplet. The opening is changed from "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds," to "Self-blinding error sees all those minds who with false appellations call that love, which alters when it alterations finds." A likely practical reason for these added lines is to create more verses to be sung. However, in the context of the English Civil War, the additional lines could also be read as an appeal towards religious and political loyalty. Although the additional lines are quite ambiguous in meaning, they read more politically when read in the collection of a royalist, surrounded by royalist poetry. The added lines potentially transform the sonnet from a meditation on romantic love into a powerful political statement. It is worth noting that the public performance of songs was outlawed during the Republican regime. Many musicians, like Henry Lawes himself, survived by secret private performances in the home. Not only does this text provide us with a new example of how Shakespeare was being read during the Civil War, but also how his texts were being politically repurposed to suit the issues of the day. Professor Emma Smith, Professor of Shakespeare Studies at the University of Oxford, said, "This exciting discovery shows that centuries of searching for evidence about Shakespeare and his early reception hasn't exhausted the archives. Let Me Not to the Marriage of True Minds is now one of Shakespeare's most famous sonnets, but it doesn't seem to have been very popular in his own time. Whereas other sonnets were widely circulated and quoted, only one previous reference to this one was known. And what Dr. Veronese shows in her investigation of this new version is that the sonnet being understood in the context of royal politics, a long way from its role in modern weddings." Dr. Veronese's discovery sheds new light on how Shakespeare's words resonated and were reshaped during one of the most tumultuous periods in English history. Her article, "A New Copy of Sonnet 116, A Cavalier Cover Version," features in the Review of English Studies.
A Banbury woman who was shouted at for using a disabled toilet is supporting a campaign to change public perception around disability. Nikki Penrees, 36, was fitted with a stoma 2 days after having an operation to treat her bowel cancer in January 2022. Following her surgery, Miss Penrees would use disabled toilets as she needed the extra space and privacy. On one occasion, she was accused by a stranger of not having a disability and being inconsiderate. The woman apologised after Miss Penrees explained her situation, but the incident got her thinking. She joined Colostomy UK's Purple Sticker campaign, which aims to change public perception towards people with many different disabilities through stickers which share the message, "Not all disabilities are visible." Miss Penrees said, "I want to make things comfortable, so that people feel confident going into a disabled toilet. Just because you don't have a walking stick or are not in a wheelchair, it doesn't mean you don't need the facilities offered by disabled toilets. Miss Penrice and her son Reggie, 7, want residents and businesses across Oxfordshire to get involved.
Elderly residents of 2 flats in Oxford are seeking answers after Oxford City Council told them they would be evicted from their homes so they could be demolished. The City Council said they plan to demolish Northbrook House and Windale House in Blackbird Leas because they would require substantial and subsequent ongoing investment to keep them running. They added that the buildings may not be at the end of their viable life yet, but that they were not fit for modern standards. A petition urging the City Council not to evict the residents was set up earlier this month and has received more than 800 signatures so far. Residents have also contacted Annalise Dodds, MP for Oxford East, asking for her support. Joe Eugene, 67, who lives in Northbrook House, said, "We are all just depressed that we have to leave our homes. I go to bed crying and I wake up crying. There is nothing wrong with these flats as far as we know. Nobody is giving us a choice. We are being told we have to leave." She also questioned why the building would be used as temporary accommodation for homeless people in the city before it is demolished. She said, "Where are they going to put these people when they knock the building down? If they are not fit for us, then they aren't fit for anybody. We just want answers." The City Council have previously said that they are dealing with spiralling demand for temporary accommodation and that it would be better for us to invest our limited resources in meeting these urgent needs than in temporarily extending the life of both blocks in a piecemeal and increasingly expensive way. Miss Eugene also said that Blackbird Leas Parish Council were supportive of residents' plight after she addressed them at their most recent meeting. "Residents are now having to bid for a new home before the expected move-out date of April 2026. The City Council said that 2 officers will be on site to provide specialist support with the move. Miss Eugene said, "They are breaking up our friendship, our community. When we don't see people, we go and knock on their doors to make sure they're okay." Veronica Robbins, who also lives in Northbrook House, said, "Local feeling is very much outraged to the plans. There's no empathy to what it actually means to uproot vulnerable and elderly people from their homes." City Councillor Dr. Hosne Defari Marbini, who set up the petition, said, "We have had an outpouring of support with nearly 1,000 signatures on our online and paper petitions in just a few weeks. This was presented to the Parish Council, where there was overwhelming support for the residents and disgust for the way elderly residents are being treated by the Labour-led Council. The elderly residents deserve to know the truth about their supposed housing choices and to receive truly independent advice. They should not be placed in the situation of having to compete against their neighbours for the best homes locally." When contacted for comment, Annalise Dodds MP said, "I have been in repeated touch with a number of residents in Northbrook House who have expressed concerns about their housing situation. My understanding is that the City Council has been seeking to regularly liaise with residents to explain what is happening, and have already had positive responses from many of those residents. I would be very happy to support residents who need alternative housing, albeit my understanding is that this support is already being undertaken by the City Council, with 2 dedicated staff members on this. I would urge any residents who have not already been in touch with me and who have concerns to let me know and I can take these up." Blackbird Leas Parish Council were contacted for comment.
A hospital boss has apologised to a pensioner who has been waiting for more than a year for a knee replacement. Sonia May, 78, from Kidlington, has been waiting for 66 weeks for a second knee replacement. Her son, Simon Mace, has said he feels like his mother has been treated like a patient number, not a human. Mr. Mace said his mother had an appointment with an anaesthetist in November last year, but has yet to hear the results of that meeting. Following a complaint by Mr. Mace to Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, Chief Operating Officer Felicity Taylor-Drew apologised for any worry or inconvenience caused by the wait. In a message to the Trust, Mr. Mace said, "My mother, who is very frail, had her first knee replacement nearly 2 years ago. She's been waiting 66 weeks for the second knee replacement. She has a lot of quite life-threatening underlying health conditions. I really do need to make it clear to all involved that it's clear my mum is just being treated as a patient number, not a human, and certainly not an old lady who's frail and very, very frightened of this whole process. The last 3 months of stress and anxiety leading us to where we are today have had a dramatic effect on my mum emotionally. My mum really is suffering with absolute intense anxiety and stress, with the worry of this entire situation, which has been escalated to a very difficult experience. It does make me wonder whether, if I had not complained, what would have happened? How long would we have waited, and who would have really pulled this together?" He added, "This has only happened because I complained. We all know the state of the NHS. There are waits. Last time around, the anaesthetist was amazing and kept us up to date." Mrs. Mace was initially offered an appointment at the John Radcliffe Hospital on February the 27th, but that was just routine to take some blood. Mr. Mace argued that it was too short notice. An appointment has now been made for the end of March, when Mrs. Mace should get the results of the meeting with the anaesthetist last November. She will also have her blood taken for tests. Felicity Taylor-Drew, Chief Operating Officer at OUH, said, "We understand how distressing it can be to have a long wait for surgery, and we're sorry for any worry or inconvenience caused to Mrs. Mace and her son. Our team are currently working hard to bring down our waiting times for treatment, including providing additional sessions during the week, running additional clinics and operating lists, and offering patients treatment options at nearby providers if this is what they would prefer."
A drinking fountain, which is hundreds of years old, will be restored to full working order in Oxford and provide refreshment for the public. The Walton Well Drinking Fountain in Jericho, at the junction between Walton Well and South Moor Roads, dates back to the 19th century. Work has now begun to restore the monument as a public amenity, with a safe drinking water supply by the Oxford Preservation Trust, OPT. Anna Evers, Chief Executive of OPT, said, "Oxford Preservation Trust is delighted to be restoring the Walton Well drinking fountain, so it can once again provide fresh drinking water for the local community." The fountain was built by William Ward, former Lord Mayor of Oxford, in 1885. Through time and neglect, the structure decayed until it was no longer providing drinking water from the natural spring which it's built on. In a bid to save it, OPT launched a fundraising campaign last October and received overwhelming support from the community and generous donors.
A cardiac arrest survivor from Oxford is urging the public to support the charity that helped to save his life. Darren Davis, who collapsed at his home in Headington last year, is calling on the public to get behind Thames Valley Air Ambulance. Mr. Davis was training for his sixth marathon when he collapsed. His wife, Debbie, quickly began CPR before the South Central Ambulance Service and Thames Valley Air Ambulance arrived to provide care. Mr. Davis, who has made an amazing recovery, is now fronting the Thames Valley Air Ambulance Spring Raffle, which offers players the chance to win £2,500. The Air Ambulance Service receives no government or NHS funding, so every ticket purchased will help to fund critical care for people in need. Mr. Davis said, "I could have been one of the 9 out of 10 who don't survive a cardiac arrest. But because of the care I received that day, I'm the one that lived. They give people a fighting chance when the worst happens. Your support could make the difference between life and death. Please give whatever you can." Amanda McLean, Chief Executive Officer at Thames Valley Air Ambulance, added, "We're so grateful to Darren for supporting our spring raffle. We are called out an average of 9 times a day, and hearing from people like Darren shows that behind every incident is a real person with a story to tell. Playing our raffle is a great way to get behind your local air ambulance, while also putting yourself in the running to win some fantastic prizes. There may be 60 cash prizes up for grabs, but every ticket sold is a winning ticket to us, because it allows us to keep providing life-saving care in our community. Thames Valley Air Ambulance protects, saves, and revives lives by providing critical care at the scene and beyond. The public support allows the charity to help people in a medical emergency 365 days a year. In 2024, the charity was called out 3,129 times, including almost 900 times in Oxfordshire. Overall, it assisted 860 people in Oxfordshire, 1,081 in Buckinghamshire, and 1,123 in Berkshire. February, despite being the shortest month, was also the charity's busiest in 2024, with 282 call-outs. Its crews assisted 229 seriously ill or injured children throughout the year, including 91 younger than 5. The most frequent type of call-out was for cardiac arrests, with 1,207 incidents over the year, averaging 3 per day.
Phoebe Poole scored a hat-trick as Oxford United women recorded a 3-0 victory at Gwalior United. The win extended United's unbeaten run to 5 matches in the Southern Premier Division, and the lead came after just 8 minutes. Lucy Trinder drove down the wing and her cross was slotted in by Poole after Laura O'Sullivan-Jones saved the initial effort. Kylie Nolan and Manon Pearce both went close to getting an equaliser for the hosts, but it was the visitors who entered the break with a 1-goal advantage. Gwalior continued their search for a leveller in the second period. However, Poole extended the Ewes lead with a stunning strike from outside the penalty box midway through the second half. Poole then completed her hat-trick with 12 minutes left on the clock when a shot hit the post before rebounding into the net off the helpless O'Sullivan-Jones. Poole went close to scoring a sensational 4th goal late on, but her overhead kick flew just the wrong side of the crossbar. United manager Sam Rowe said, "I was really pleased. 3-0 and a clean sheet. Phoebe Poole has been outstanding. It was a complete number nine performance as I've seen out of a player in our side. Everybody has worked tremendously hard behind her to ultimately make sure we don't concede a goal. We dug in last week against Lewis and dug in again. We've also played some good football and played with some quality. We had lots of chances in the first half, and we were maybe disappointed to be going in just at 1-0. Beth Howard made a really good save in the second half to keep Gwala out, and we found our way back into it in the second half and gone on to score two more goals. The girls have been absolutely outstanding, and full credit to them, they've been brilliant. The Ewes are third in the Southern Premier Division table on 35 points with four games to go. Hashtag United sit top of the division on 42 points, and although second place Ipswich Town are 6 points shy of the leaders, they have three games in hand on both teams either side of them. On his side's position in the league table, Rowe said, "That's where we want to be, and we're looking forward to the four last games. We should be full of confidence because we're doing both sides of the game at the moment. We're playing, and when we have to fight and scrap, we're able to do that as well, which is really encouraging. The players have been absolutely brilliant, so full credit to them."
A pilot project at Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, OUH, is reducing hospital waiting times as well as the need for multiple hospital visits. The breathlessness pathway, a one-stop diagnostic service, provides investigations, diagnosis, and management advice for breathlessness in a single appointment. 8 primary care centres in Oxfordshire, focusing on areas of higher social deprivation, were selected for the pilot. GPs can refer patients to the service if they have suffered from breathlessness for more than 8 weeks and have an unclear diagnosis. The service offers a range of diagnostic tests, with patients and their tests reviewed on the same day. The service also has a physician and a physiotherapist and provides information on breathlessness generally, as well as tobacco dependency advice. It is based at the Oxford Community Diagnostic Centre, CDC, in Kiley, and is funded by the NHS England CDC Pathway and Instigation Programme. In a recent report, the pathway received positive feedback from patients. Dr. Emily Fraser, respiratory medicine consultant at OUH, said, "We are proud of the significant difference this service has made in improving patient care. We are committed to supporting NHS England's wider goal of delivering diagnostic care within primary and secondary care, making healthcare more accessible, providing earlier diagnosis, and reducing health inequalities. It has only been possible because of the input of the whole team, including our excellent administrative and physiotherapy colleagues. Despite presenting with symptoms like breathlessness years beforehand, patients with respiratory diseases are often diagnosed at a late stage. Exacerbations of respiratory diseases can result in a high use of healthcare services and are a common cause of acute hospital admission. Early diagnosis through easier access to clinical pathways is essential for preventing disease progression, improving clinical outcomes, and reducing health and social care costs." Professor Andrew Brent, Chief Medical Officer at OUH, added, "It is important that our teams find innovative solutions to make our services more efficient and reduce patient waiting times, as well as improving overall patient experience. We are thrilled to see the positive impact of the breathlessness pathway, with rapid and early diagnosis, which are essential for aiding successful treatment, as well as reducing our costs and carbon footprint.
That was the last news item for this week's Ox Talk. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, then please ring Margaret on a new number, 07496 062280, and do please leave your name and contact or phone number so that we can return your call. This edition and previous editions of Ox Talk can be found on our website, oxtalk.org.uk, and you can listen there or you can download an edition to listen at your leisure. And it's goodbye from me, and I wish you a peaceful week. Goodbye.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.